Garrison on the Field of 68 Network. I have the pleasure of having Mr. Patrick Stevens here of the Washington Post. I definitely appreciate your time, sir. How's it going?
It's going well, Travis. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. No complaints at all on this beautiful Saturday.
It is lovely outside.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, quick question. How long have you been at the Washington Post?
Well, I've been contributing to the Post now for about 6 years or so, but okay. I've been in the area for a good long time. Basically been working at either a newspaper or an outlet in D.C. for most of the last 20 or so years. So,
okay. So
pretty familiar with the territory.
Okay, okay. So obviously you've been following the sports around here for quite some time, so you've seen a lot of the coming in and the outs and the ups and downs of the Washington metropolitan sports.
Certainly, and particularly the college sports scene. So very, very familiar.
Yeah, so obviously big news that's coming up, coming out as of recent with Coach Turgeon and Merlin parting ways. What are your thoughts on that? And I mean, me being around the university for some time in regards to, you know, around the fans and around the alumni and just hearing conversations, I mean, they kind of wasn't happy with him for quite some time now. But and the conversation is always like, what do I think and how do I feel about him? And like I said, great guy, you know, always welcomed me back and always wanted me around to help out however I can. But I guess he just wasn't winning fast enough or enough for everybody, you know. So
the comparison I kind of made, and you'll appreciate this from your era of playing at Maryland, is I felt like he was kind of like Herb Sendek at NC State. You know, like you made the tournament just about every year. Like Sendek made the tournament his last 5 years at NC State. If we count the pandemic year, Turgeon made the tournament 6 out of the last 7 years. By any measure, that's really good. But sometimes good just isn't good enough. And I think for Maryland fans in particular, the lack of success in March meant there was less and less patience for other stuff as things went along. So, you know, I think that if you size up Turgeon's tenure, it isn't as bad as a lot of people would like you to believe that it is. But at the same time, I think after 10 plus seasons, it's fair to say that you know what you had.
Right.
And I think that what you had was a really good coach. And if you want to roll the dice and make a change, or if you're happy that he's out and resigned, or however you want to spin it, right? Like, you could wind up with a better coach, but you could also end up with a worse coach and worse results.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the whole conversation. Like I said, people have been talking to me about this for a little bit now. But I look at it from both sides as a former player and also from, I can see their perspective in regards to wanting to win, especially as they got the national championship and they got a few. So, and what they're saying is they gave him time. And so for example, if COVID doesn't hit 2 years ago, COVID doesn't hit, and they go as far as everybody, it was looking like they were going to go, does this still happen?
If they go as far as people would have thought they might have gone, let's say they would have made a second weekend. Let's say they're a Sweet 16 team. They're like a 4 seed or something like that 2 years ago. You know what happens then? Turgeon probably gets a contract extension that doesn't have a diminished buyout in it or anything, and you don't even have the finances to be able to put pressure on it. Because that's essentially, when you think about it, like what was the reason why they couldn't make a move realistically, besides the fact of what we've talked about, like, are you going to get a better coach, all that? Well, Maryland doesn't have any money. I mean, it's like the long-running thing. They don't have any money. So you couldn't afford to be able to make a change. And at that point, you know, he's made a Sweet 16 in 16. He's made one in 20. Maybe that's not, you know, 7 and 11 years like Gary Williams had at one point, but it's still something, right? So, you know, that's the great what-if of Mark Turgeon's tenure. What does that Anthony Cowan Jr. team do if it gets into the postseason? And it's a what-if that we'll never have an answer to, and it's probably as big a regret as Turgeon has as anything else over his 10-plus seasons in college ball.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's like I say, I play both sides of the field when that conversation comes up to me all the time. And then, like I said, because I know him personally, so I see it differently. But I guess now you say it, now do we see if the grass is greener on the other side? Now, obviously, Coach Manning has stepped in. Obviously, he got the experience as a former player and then as, you know, coaching at the high level as well. So we see what he does. He's the intern for the rest of the year. But if that doesn't stick, who in your mind, who are you thinking? I mean, this question has been happening like since they heard the news broke. Who do you think that you think should come to Maryland that will give Maryland that feel back? You know, because even when I go to games now, maybe because they're in the Big Ten and I'm biased because I was an ACC.
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you.
It doesn't feel. Maybe times has changed. I don't know, but it doesn't. When I go to games, it don't have that same feel as it did when I was there. I mean, maybe because I'm biased, maybe because I played, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, first off, on that point, like, you know, you had 60 years of playing not just Carolina and Duke and Virginia, but Wake Forest and Clemson and NC State, and so. You know, maybe a Wake Forest Maryland game doesn't move the needle that much, but it still would move the needle more than Iowa coming to town, you know, on a Thursday night. Like, well, are you supposed to get excited about that? And by the way, it works the other way, too. Do you think Iowa's thrilled to have Maryland coming to town as much as Ohio State does now? I mean, of course they're not, right? Their fans aren't as excited about that. So that's certainly a variable. In terms of what they need, what and who they need to go get, I think there's something that we learned through the Turgeon years that really stood out to me. You know, during his introductory press conference, the thing that I walked away from was thinking, gosh, this guy's really Midwestern, like just a really even keel Midwestern guy. And at Maryland, you got Lefty and you've got Gary, and those are larger than life personalities, the chip on the shoulder type, the showman. I mean, Gary and Lefty aren't the same, but there are some similarities there. And I feel like some of Turgeon's shortcomings or some of those, you know, early exits would have been overlooked a little bit if Maryland fans felt like there was a strong connection there, like a really emotional, you know, we're going to get after it and all this stuff. And you know how Gary was, you know, and everybody kind of has all those Lefty stories. And, you know, I feel like they need a huge personality as much as anything else, a guy that will connect with people. And who that is, I don't know who that is, but I almost feel like that is almost a prerequisite. Is it just a guy that emotionally has a connection with fans and is, you know, the kissing babies type and is the promoting type. I mean, that's not who Mark Turgeon is. And that's not a knock on Mark, but he's not the sort that was going to go do any more of that than he absolutely had to do. He wasn't going to do any more media than he absolutely had to do. And I'm not criticizing him for that. I always got along well with him. But, you know, that just isn't who he is. You couldn't expect him to be somebody else. But I think Maryland needs to go find that kind of personality. And you can imagine some names out there that fill that sort of, you know, thought process. But that to me is, I think, the big thing. Somebody to reconnect with fans who clearly, you know, like you said, and some of it was the Big Ten stuff, but the vibe wasn't quite the same as it had been 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Right. Absolutely. And like you said, it's people seeing that and the fans can feel that. And obviously, you know, the Boosters alumni is those around the university that's been there and committed to the university for quite some time can feel that. And they want that back. You know, like I said, I had conversations with these individuals and they would, you can feel it through the conversation. But in your mind, who would you want my
and you're not letting me off the hook here, are you?
Nope.
You're not so, letting me off the hook.
I mean, okay. Even if it's just to bring that heart and feeling back to College Park, even if it's just for a couple of years, just to bring that energy back, who would you love or would like to see
in that position? I got three names that fill the personality thing. And I'm not sitting here endorsing any of these guys as a head coach. I don't know if any of these guys would come. Right. But there's three guys that immediately popped into my mind. One was Bruce Pearl. You know, he obviously has NCAA baggage, but a huge personality. And the sort of guy that would sell whatever program he's at. So no question there. The second is Ed Cooley up at Providence, who has done a fabulous job up there. Doesn't have a ton of postseason success, but is recruited really well. He's a New England lifer, a really good dude, would connect with a lot of people. Does he want to leave Providence? You know, he obviously was in the mix for Michigan a few years ago when Juwan Howard got that job. So, and the third guy is somebody I don't think people would normally think of, but Steve Forbes at Wake Forest is another guy, huge personality. He coached under Pearl at Tennessee. He was on the Wichita State staff for a while, did great work at East Tennessee State. That's somebody that maybe as much as anybody would get out and press the flesh and just kind of thrives off of that engagement. Now, he's only been at Wake 2 years. Is that enough, all that? I don't know. But those are the sorts of personalities that I would be thinking about, you know, because I really believe not just do you have to have the basketball part of the equation, and all three of those guys check that box, and there's a bunch of other guys that check that box. Right. But to be able to have that sort of engagement, those are guys that stand out to me.
And obviously, you know, I heard like people obviously just comments through conversation talking. They was like, you know, they would love to see a Juwan Dixon come back and maybe fill that void just for the purpose. I mean, you know, I know he's at Coppin State right now, and I believe, and but you know, they mentioned like him just because everybody loves Juwan. I mean, he brought him the national championship, and you know, obviously, he don't have that many years coaching experience. Mm-hmm. And we want that move, but just for that, the bring that energy back in from the Baltimore area, and you know, even like you know, what do you think about like a Dave Dickerson? You know, a former under Gurry that coached under Gurry, and you know, now is head coaching. And what do you think about that? I'm just spitballing here.
I feel like they need to find somebody that is a fairly proven commodity. And if you're Maryland, and I'm sure a lot of Maryland fans would like to believe they're a top 10 job. There's probably some cynics that would have them a little lower. I'd say it's probably a top 20 to 25 job. I mean, you've won a national title this century. Right. So there's a lot going for you just with that. Right. And I feel like you can find somebody that's accomplished, that has several NCAA tournament appearances. You know, Juwan has actually done a pretty good job the last few years at Coppin State. Forget the overall record because they're off playing. Right. I mean, we're sitting here December 4th. They've already played 12 games. To give you a sense of what they're like this year. They're 1-11. They've just basically been on the road almost the entire last month or so. You know, and Dave Dickerson's at USC upstate. This is his second go around as a head coach. I feel like you need to find somebody that has had a fair level of high level success, or at least close to high level success. And I don't mean to diminish either of those two guys. I think Juwan probably needs to, you know, make an NCAA tournament at Coppin, which, right. You know, that league's down to 8 teams. You know, he's got some dudes that they could be in that mix soon enough. I don't know about what Dave wants to do. I think he's coaching his son down there at Upstate. I'm not sure about that, but I feel like that's a gig that he's kind of settled into a little bit, but I feel like you really need somebody that's been a head coach at a reasonably high level. To be able to deal with all the demands that this job is going to have.
And there will be a lot of demands. Because like you said they were patient long enough. Now they want to win now. They think they deserve to win now. You know, obviously, like you said, Maryland is not a low-level school. It's in D.C. area. It's a great job, you know. So it'd be interesting to see what Coach Manning do this year. I mean, do you think they keep him as head coach if he does prove to, you know, settle in and get things turned around?
Well, I want to take it back a little bit here, because what's interesting about Danny Manning's time as the head coach at Wake Forest is you look at their statistical profile and they are basically the opposite of what a Turgeon team is. They ran a ton. They were usually decent on offense. They were highly questionable on defense. So do we see a substantial stylistic change in this team over the next few weeks? Just basically saying, let's just go out and run. You know, if you have a situation where I don't really care that Kudus Wahab can't guard much beyond 8 to 10 feet from the basket, the heck with it. We got a big guy. Let's just play through him, all that sort of stuff. And so I think it's possible that you see a very different style of team by the time we get to the first of the year, just based on those both the preferences of both of those coaches. If they were to make a Sweet 16, I think you certainly have to consider it. Plus, I mean, let's face it, Danny Manning, when you look at his Wake Forest tenure, he recruited pretty well, and he developed big guys pretty well. His problem, besides the defense, which was a legitimate problem, but his problem was that those guys basically left after 2 years. And yeah. So, like, they thought they were going to be able to build around a John Collins. They had the Greek kid whose name is escaping me at the moment down there that turned pro. They had a couple other guys that were in and out of there really quick. If he could have had some continuity, he might have been able to do a little bit more. Remember, they made the tournament, which is something that Wake hadn't done in, what, 8-9 years or so prior to that. So I think he's certainly somebody that between that and his time at Tulsa is a tested head coach. But I do think that to realistically be able to be considered, you at least have to make the tournament this year, if not be able to show some progress. And it would be something like if you're sitting there and Danny Manning is interim coach, makes a Sweet 16, that's as many as Turgeon made in 10 years. And so maybe you say, hey, this is somewhat proven. But I do think you're going to need to do quite a bit to be able to make that sell.
Absolutely. So with the change beginning of the season, do you think, especially with the new transfers coming in, so it's a lot of adjusting the movies. Mm-hmm. The transfer's coming in, so you're trying to get the chemistry going with that. And I had conversations with individuals about that, too, in regards to – but their experience, they have that experience, so it can happen. And then, you know, we played with a few guys before they came. So, but the continuity and the coming together and trying to get on the same page. And then you have this coaching change and right there in between all that. Do you think that affect things – right now in regards to the team? Obviously it does affect them, but like what big of effect that do you think that can have on this team right now? Especially you said they already mm-hmm. few and you know.
Yeah, I mean I have to think that there's already a fair level of frustration on that roster right now. And I do think it's fair to wonder how well those pieces can fit together regardless of system. I mean you bring in a Fats Russell who's a guy who has always taken a lot of shots during his career at Rhode Island. Even when he was teamed with Jeff Doughton, the great point guard at the A-10 level, you know, he was the guy that was receiving those passes.
Right.
And, you know, I think that Maryland envisioned him being just a stabilizing point guard that they didn't have last year. And that just isn't who Fats Russell is. And, you know, I probably was a little more optimistic than I should have been that he would be a guy that would go, hey, you know, I'm going to take half as many shots, but twice as many of them are going to be good open shots. And right. that hasn't happened. And right. So you have him and you've got Wahab, who we talked about earlier, not necessarily the most versatile guy, certainly defensively, not somebody that is as stout as a lot of what Turgeon would have liked. You know, I think that, you know, there's a way to kind of tinker with that a bit, but you still have to be able to make those two pieces work.
Right.
And I don't know how easy it's going to be to do that.
Right.
I do think, though, that if you have a setup that's basically, let's play, you know, basically play through the big dude who can, yeah. you know, make a bunch of dunks and layups and whatnot, maybe that gives you a little bit more of an identity than what you've had so far this season. Because, I mean, you saw the game on Wednesday. That was pretty indicative of how much this team has struggled to really have an idea of really knowing what, and I don't want to say knowing what it's doing, but to really have a clear purpose on offense. And I think that's been lacking in the first month of the season.
And that's kind of what people have been saying to me in regards to, like, they don't have an identity, right? They don't, they mm-hmm. never found an identity. Obviously, you know, with Coach Williams, we had, mm-hmm. defense, you know, he emphasized defense and, you know, but that's what the question was, like, you know, Coach Turgeon, they just don't have an identity. Like, what is their thing?
What do they do?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, obviously being a former player there, I want to see them be successful. And I know I can't say it's long overdue because, I mean, you have to earn that, right? But I'm pretty sure, you know, like you said, they want to win now. So you said, like you said, like in regards to whomever they want to bring in, they have to be a kind of like a big name, like they for everybody to be happy with that. And then you have the new president that's there in Maryland. So it's it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, there's two things I kind of want to throw in here. One is because of the era of the transfer portal and player movement, 1,700 guys changing schools after last season. You see one or two schools have immediate success doing that. Like they go and you cherry pick a bunch of guys. Well, why can't anybody do that?
Right.
You know, that's sort of the fan philosophy there. It's harder than it looks. Yeah. You know, it's really hard to build a good team.
Yeah.
It's not something where you just cherry pick and go, well, this is going to work just fine. I've got a fantasy team out there.
Right.
You know, so that's something that I think stands out to me, that it's not instantaneous. And to get back to the other point that I made earlier, let's say you go and you make a splashy hire and it doesn't work and it just implodes on you in 2 or 3 years. And suddenly you find yourself in a crater. I mean, right. not that Pitt made a splashy hire when they hired Kevin Stallings after Jamie Dixon left, but Pitt fans couldn't have imagined that 2 years after Jamie Dixon left, they'd have an 0-18 team in the ACC and would be staring up like, how do we get out of this? Right. Now, I think Maryland's ceiling is higher than Pitt's, but, you know, it's not impossible that things get worse before they get better. And to expect an instant change for the better might be a little, I don't want to say unrealistic, but it's not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. And that's what you're saying. Like, so you basically, I mean, fans, they have to be patient a little bit longer now. You had your, 10 year stretch where you was waiting for it. Now you got to expect to maybe wait even longer. So it's like, is it worth it? Like, you said, but like, is the grass greener on the other side? Type?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys wanted to change. Okay, we want to change things up now. But is it going to be better? Is it going to be, like you said?
It's a great what if. And, you know, I go back to that Sendek example at NC State. Mm-hmm. And the thing I remember, you know, Sidney Lowe didn't make the tournament in 5 years, and that was that. But I never remember any NC State fans complaining about, gosh, I wish Herb Sendek had stayed.
Right.
And so if you're a fan and you're willing to own it, if you're willing to say, okay, whatever's happening in the next 5 years, it's better than simply staying the course and figuring, all right, the next 5 years, we're probably going to make the tournament 4 times. And if you're lucky, make it out of the first weekend once.
Right.
If you're okay with trading that and you're not going to complain about, oh, well, that was a terrible, that I really wish we hadn't done that. Wish Turgeon was back. Then it's a little more palatable to be making that trade, you know. Right. Like if you're willing to own it, and you're willing to say this is a better scenario,
yeah.
Okay. Right. But understand, it isn't guaranteed.
Hey, absolutely. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about, what do you think about the transfer portal? It's so much going on in the game of basketball these days. I can't keep up. It's like it makes me sound old, but I'm not that old. But it's a different time. It's a different time, and guys didn't like. I mean, obviously you could transfer back when I was playing, but you had to, I think, wait a year or something like that. But now you can, like, you kind of. I'm not happy here, so I'm just gonna just go right now and go somewhere else. Like, it's interesting. What do you think is a good thing or a bad thing? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's good that guys can move on and be able to play immediately and all that. I think the further down you get in the pecking order, like you get into mid-major leagues, guy goes and has 2 good years, decides, hey, it's time to move on and get something better. You know, I mean, good for him, but that's not good for those teams that are built more on player development maybe than schools that are either now cherry-picking transfers or dealing in higher end 1 or 2 year guys before they move on to the pros. I think that there's a balance that could be achieved here. And I do think it's good. You know, if you have, you shouldn't be able to just skip from school to school to school. I mean, there's guys out there. I can think of at least one guy out there who's playing for his 4th Division I school this season, which is crazy, right? I mean, like, that probably shouldn't happen.
Right.
But if you have a guy, I think there's something to be said for, you know, you're 18 to 22. You want to be treated like an adult, right? Like, you don't want to be treated like a kid. So if you make a mistake or you have a coach get fired or whatever, you should have that freebie where you can move on without penalty, right? Like, if you're not playing enough, if the coach gets fired, whatever. But you do have to be able to make a good decision for yourself at some point. If you've gone through the process once, you probably ought to be able to make a better decision for yourself and have a better idea of where you fit. So it's the guys that are moving on to a third school and a fourth school that you kind of look at and you think, gosh, this is a little out of hand on this front. But right. I do think that being able to, you make a mistake or you just don't play enough. You're not good enough to play someplace.
Right.
Or vice versa. Like, you're just really good and you want to challenge yourself at a higher level. I get it. And I also think the grad transfer rule is really good too, where if you've got your degree, you can go play wherever you want. And so there are guys that move to a third school that way, where they, you know, transfer early in their career, they get their degree, they move on. I think another factor in here too, for right now, that's inflating this a bit, is the fifth year, the extra bonus year of eligibility with COVID. So I think that some of this will simmer down a little bit as you get some of those guys out of the system that don't have that fifth year of eligibility to play with.
Right.
But, you know, there is probably more of a middle ground to this than what we've seen. But I think it's better to be able to have the ability to move on if the situation isn't good for you, at least the first time, than being stuck in kind of purgatory and saying, oh, well, will the coach release me or something like that. By far, it's better to have some freedom of player movement than it is to have the previous system.
Absolutely. Yeah, like I said, it gets so confusing. But like you said, you know, guys can...
I turn on games and I see guys playing in other places. It's like, oh, that's where he landed. You know, like, I mean... I'll see. There's three guys from the ACC, and they're playing in a Cincinnati, Arkansas game or something like that. And so it's like, oh, that's where that guy landed. And it feels like it's an every night thing where you can't keep track of where all these guys land. It's like, and you just sort of stumble upon it. It's like, oh, well, good for him. You know,
absolutely. One last thing, now the players are able to accept or basically make money off their names.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was a long time coming. It's been talks since I was in school. You know, I didn't know how it was going to happen. But I guess because of guys leaving or deciding to go elsewhere, overseas or to the G League, to the college, I guess they had to do something to keep the players home. So you think it helps the college game in the sense of now players wouldn't be so enticed to leave or go to the NBA early or decide, okay, I do want that college experience to go to college and get that whole experience, you know? So what are your thoughts on that?
I think that for the guys that are high-end NBA level guys, they're going to go to the NBA regardless. I think for a guy that might have, that's an incoming freshman that has a choice between doing overseas or one of those peripheral leagues of the G League, it evens the score a little bit.
Right.
But, you know, I also definitely think that for guys that are, you know, 3 and 4 year guys, remember, you know, it's not that long ago that you had most high end programs, you know, they were built with like 3rd and 4th year guys.
Right.
And you were looking for a way to keep those groups together. And, you know, you had connections. You know, fans connected with players that have been there for a while. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, today, like, you could name me, you know, name a year in the last decade for Kentucky or Duke, and the best you can do is, like, which one-and-done guy was on those teams this year? So, you know, I think that adding some value for those guys is great. And those are the guys that I think that over the long haul are going to benefit as much as anybody else. I think your higher-end guys that are going to be lottery picks in the NBA, first round picks in the NFL. They'll make some money in college now. Good for them. Great for them. But I think the people that are probably going to benefit as much as anybody are the ones that are going to be able to connect with fan bases over several years and have the personalities to do that. I think of a guy like Eric Ayala. That's a perfect example of a dude that's, you know, been a great representative for Maryland over the last 4 years. A guy that has a good personality, really bright guy. And he's somebody that could have thrived with this from the jump, just being able to connect more and more. And I think for guys like that, that, you know, I know Eric has high aspirations for himself beyond this year, but certainly not a guy that's guaranteed to have a 10-year NBA career by any stretch of the imagination. So to be able to be able to make some money and, you know, further that bond with the fans that you've been around now for 3 or 4 years, I think that's fantastic. And I think those are the people that I think will maybe benefit as much as anyone.
I wish I could have benefited when I was this kid.
Been a guy that could have done that, you know?
But I am happy for these guys now that, you know, I think, you know, a lot of these universities are making a lot of money off their name and jersey sales and things like that. So it's good that these guys actually get paid now and be able to enjoy college life without having to stress about the finances. But Mr. Stevens, I appreciate your time on the Go Terps with Travis Garrison and the Fitness 68 Networks. I definitely appreciate your time, sir. Thanks for coming on this beautiful Saturday. Thanks for taking time out your day.
Thanks so much for having me, Travis.
You have a good one.
You too.